Last time I was here, I turned off this mic and forgot to turn this one on, so we're going to try to do it right this time and make sure you guys can hear me. Great. It's good to be back with you guys. It's good to come here and talk with you, to talk about how your week's been and where my parents are at and all those fun things. It's strange being here without my parents being here, but still a lovely thing, because I think they have a wonderful congregation in you guys, a family that loves them, takes care of them, and they can also contribute to. And that's what God's design is. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. We're going to go to Hebrews chapter 13. I don't know what your experience is with the book of Hebrews. For some of you, this might be a book that you love, that you go to often. And for others of you, it might be like how I grew up with the book of Hebrews. I thought it was really intimidating and challenging. And I don't speak Hebrew, I'm not Hebrew, and it's kind of close to Revelation, so I'm just going to stay away from it. And that was my mindset when I thought of the book of Hebrews. But then I explored it and I learned it, and it's beautiful and it's amazing. And it tells you about Christ and your relationship to Him and how you should view Him. And it makes it so much deeper than maybe what it is right now. So if you haven't explored the book of Hebrews, if you haven't read it recently, I challenge you to go and read it. Read it on through. It's amazing. So the book of Hebrews, how it's set up is it's talking about the superiority of Christ, how He's more superior than the angels, more superior than Moses, and all these different things. And that's the beginning of the book of Hebrews. And towards the end, it tells us about our response to this Christ we follow and how we should be living a superior life. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is the practical aspect of Hebrews. What's our response to the Christ we follow? What does our life look like because of this Christ we're following? And specifically, we're going to look at chapter 13. Chapter 13, where the first verse says, "Let brotherly love continue." Let brotherly love continue. And the thing about this, The thing about this is it's let brotherly love continue. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes, especially when I was younger, I like to compartmentalize things. So I had like my school friends, and when I go to school, I'd hang out with those friends, and I'd talk with them, and we'd sit next to each other in class, and I'd have my work friends. And when I'd go to work, I'd say, hey, and we'd be nice, and we'd talk about each other's weeks. But when I went out from those places, I never really talked to them anymore. And it was nothing against them, it was a mutual understanding, but I think sometimes we can have church friends, where we come here on Wednesdays and Sundays, and we talk and we have conversation, but then when we leave the building, we don't know what's going on, we don't know each other's struggles. But God uses to describe His family a brotherly love, something that's intimate, something that's special. It's not just casual. It's not, I'm just showing up on Wednesdays, and I'm showing up on Sundays, and we're having a few conversations, I sit in my pew, and then I leave. This is a family that we're building. And for some of you, family might be a sensitive word. That maybe you grew up with a family that wasn't very loving, that there was a lot of anger and hatred and fighting, and that's what you view as family. Or maybe you've been a part of church families in the past that the same thing was happening, where there's anger and division, and this person was saying that this color of the carpet was better than this color of the carpet, and it just kept going and going and growing. But God calls us to do something better than that. And He tells us how to be better than that. He tells us how to be a loving family and let this love continue. So that's what the lesson is going to be on. What are these practical things that God tells us on how to be a loving family and care for each other and to build these intimate connections? But before we get there, I also wanted to say something about this first verse again. That this is something we should already have. If letting brotherly love continue is the goal, that means that it was already there in the first place. Now, this is an expectation that God has for us, that this is something we're already doing. Not something that we're perfect at, maybe something that needs critiques and correction, but it's something that's already there and that can grow. So let it continue. Let it keep growing. That's what He wants out of us. And you know, there's sometimes hard lessons that you have to give as a preacher, where you might say something that's against the cultural norm, might say something that isn't pleasing to the ears, but it's the Word of God and needs to be said. This is not one of those passages in the Bible. This is something we should all want. We should all want to be a loving community. Don't you want to be a part of a loving community? And better yet, don't you want to contribute to a loving community? And so hopefully I can apply some practical things that we can do to contribute to that community that we have. And finally, before we move on, this is something that can wane. If it's something that can continue, it's also something that can discontinue. That if we're not constantly growing in this, that maybe it goes away and it lessens. And when that happens, often difficulties arise. And most church divisions, most conflicts inside of a church family happen because of a lack of love, of putting yourself above the people around you. So this is something that we need to keep in mind, that we're doing this in an intimate way. We're loving each other like a family does, that we want this to thrive and keep growing, because if it doesn't, it could result in consequences. So the first thing that we see about what to do to bring about this loving family is in verse 2 of Hebrews 13. It says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some of you have entertained angels unawares." There's some words that we use a lot in the Bible and while we're talking in church and in Bible classes that I think people understand somewhat, but maybe have a lack of full understanding. And hospitality is one of those words, I believe. That we throw it around, we kind of know what it means, but maybe we really don't. Hospitality means the love of strangers. The love of strangers. That's what it means to be hospitable, is to love strangers. And traditionally, how this would look, because there wasn't hotels and places to stay, is as travelers were coming through, you'd have them in your home, and you give them a place to stay and food to eat. And a modern-day approach of what this looks like is having people into your home for a meal, to share something special. Because there's something special about sharing a meal. That's why we do it every week. That we're sharing a meal together and we're growing closer together. And so God calls us, he says, don't neglect doing this. Don't neglect to show hospitality to strangers, to have them into your home and to create a home for them, a place for them. But it's not just about inviting people into your home, into a physical location. It's also about who you are. Are you being a home to others? Is this a part of how people would describe you? Are you a homey person? A place where people can go and feel comfortable and like they have a place and that can talk to and be around and abide in. Is that how people would describe you? Because God is expecting us, yes, to have people in a physical location, but also this is who we should be. We should be a home to strangers. And it's something that God says, do not neglect. He says this, do not neglect this. And we can make every excuse that you can think of in the book. My house isn't as nice as their house, and I really don't have the money to afford that much food. And, you know, I think that if people came in, it wouldn't even be that great anyway, and I don't think that's how I can contribute the most. God says, do not neglect this. He doesn't ask you your situation and then say, maybe so, maybe not. He says, don't neglect this. And this is important for everyone. This is important to everyone to be a part of. That if you're building a family, we should be building a family together. We should be creating a home together for each other. The context of what's going on here is Genesis 18. Hebrews is filled with these allusions to the Old Testament. And what it's alluding here is, if you remember, Abraham has these visitors. He has these three random visitors in Genesis 18. If you would, please turn your Bibles over to Genesis 18. Just so you can see what I'm talking about. As we get to Genesis 18, like I said, he's sitting outside of his tent and he sees these three guys walking. And it says different things about what Abraham does when he sees these three guys walking. First, in verse 2, it says he goes and he runs from the tent door to meet them. Now, this is something he's excited about. He wants to go and serve these people and have them into his home. And then in verse 4, it says he goes and he washes their feet and gives them rest. He serves them. He brings himself lowly in serving them. And in verse 7, it says that he goes and he sacrifices this calf, and he sacrifices something that's valuable to himself to contribute to these people. And in verse 6, he's involving Sarah, his whole family, in this. And this is something that Abraham's a part of and wants to do and contribute to. And the Hebrews writers is quoting back to this event when this is happening, saying, be like this. Have this attitude to strangers. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, I'm not Abraham. You know, I live in the 21st century. I don't have this special connection to God like Abraham did. My life looks a lot different, and Abraham really doesn't know my struggles and what I look like. I would say maybe that's true in a way, but I also think you don't know the struggles of Abraham. That man-made chapters are man-made divisions. So man came along and put verses and chapters. I think they're very useful. I couldn't say that I would do it better if it was up to me. But what was going on in Abraham's life when this was taking place? When chapter 18 starts, if you look back just a few verses later, maybe immediately after this is what's happening, look at verse 24. Abraham was 99 years old, and he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, and Ishmael his son was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. That very day, Abraham and his son Ishmael were circumcised, and all the men of his house, those born in the house, and those bought with money from a foreigner, were circumcised with him. We don't know for sure. We don't know how much time took place between these events. But let's say it's 10 days. You're 99 years old. You don't have the energy you used to. You don't have that vigor. And you go and you run to serve people. That's how excited you are. At 99, you run to go and serve people. And you just underwent a surgery, and you, and not only you, but your whole male household, everyone in it, all your servants, and still you're going through that pain, through that inconvenience, and you're serving these people. That, yeah, maybe Abraham doesn't know what it's like to be you in the 21st century, but you don't know what it's like to be 99, just had surgery, and everyone around you, all your servants, also just had surgery, and you're going and serving people like this. This is the attitude that we should have when we are bringing people into our home. That's what God says. That's what the Hebrew writer says. So if you would, go back to Hebrews, Hebrews 13, and we'll stay there the rest of the time. Some of you have entertained angels unaware. That's how this verse ends, and maybe you've heard different things on this. I think in context, like we said, Abraham actually had angels in his house. But I don't think the point of what's being said here is that we will also, and God's going to send these spies and making sure you're doing good, and you never know if it's an angel or if it's not, so make sure you're doing right. I don't think that's the point of what's being said. Remember that this whole lesson is about letting brotherly love continue, but the first thing he says about brotherly love is go and love strangers. And you're like, well, those seem kind of different. How do I love the brethren by loving strangers? And so what I think it's talking about is just like Abraham didn't understand the impact he was having, we don't understand the impact that we can have to people in our homes. That there's so many people that haven't seen a loving marriage before. There's so many people that haven't seen how parents treat their kids well. And so many people that haven't seen a meal in front of them that's warm and that they're sharing and they're making time for this, that this is important to them. So many people go throughout their lives never experiencing that. And you can bring that gift to someone. And that has such an impact, it could impact their soul. And they no longer become strangers, but they become part of this family, part of this brotherhood. There's this really cheesy quote, and I'm going to say it, but I'm going to recognize it's cheesy before I say it. Strangers are just family that you haven't met yet. Strangers are just family you haven't met yet. That you could have an impact on the stranger and make them a part of this family just simply by having them in your home. But it also goes the other way. By having people into your home, this is not just something that you're giving, but something that you're getting. That when you understand people from different backgrounds, different ages, different walks of life, different career paths, and maybe even some of those people challenge your beliefs and help you to grow in that way, this is a gift to you. That God is blessing you, just like these angels blessed Abraham. That by having people into your home, you are being a blessing, but you're also being blessed. And that's how we're growing in this family. That we're lifting each other up. It continues on in verse 3, and he brings up another point about how to let brotherly love continue. He says, "Remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body." Why were these people in prison? Like, why are these people in prison right here? Why do we need to remember them? Were they doing criminal activity and they ended up in prison? No, they ended up in prison because they were proclaiming Christ. That they stood up for their faith. Maybe they were evangelizing and they ended up in prison because of it. And so it's saying, remember those that stood up for the Christ you follow, and remember them and go visit them. Go be involved in their life. Go identify with them. Put yourself in their shoes. Because I want you to imagine being in prison because you stood up for Christ. That maybe you had that awkward situation with your coworker and you told them about Christ, but instead of this time just being uncomfortable, you get taken away by the cops. And you end up in prison. And you're thinking, well, it's okay. It'll be fine because I have these people that care about me and they're going to come visit me and see me. They're going to come take care of me and my needs. Then no one shows up. No one shows up and that loneliness grows inside of you and you realize maybe this family isn't what I thought it was. And I'm thinking about God and my faith and what I just stood up for and how I ended up here. And I'm thinking, well, if this family isn't what I thought it was, maybe God isn't what I thought he was either. I don't think maybe a lot of us end up in prison, but maybe you've had that experience before. Or you're sitting there and you're thinking, this family isn't what I thought it was. I'm struggling, I'm going through trial, I'm going through hardship, and where is anyone at? Why am I being forgotten about? This is why that's important. Remember those who are in prison. Because maybe you end up there one day yourself, where you're going through a trial because you are in the body too. And you need to have the mindset as though you were in prison with them. This is one of the clearest commands of empathy in the Bible. To put yourself in their shoes. To try to identify with people. To try to say, I know where you're coming from. I'm going to try to put myself in this mindset and in your life. And I'm going to try to hurt with you. I'm going to try to rejoice with you. I'm going to try to share this with you. But not only am I going to feel that, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to contribute to your life. I'm going to try to help you through what you're going through. Because remember, these people are in prison because of their faith. So they're in prison because of their faith, and if I'm a Christian and my best friend just got sent to prison because he proclaimed Christ, and I know that no one else really knows I'm a Christian yet, but if I go and visit him in prison, if I go contribute to his life, if I say, I'm with this guy, maybe I end up right there next to him. And so there's a risk in that. There's a danger in that. And we don't undergo that same danger today. Maybe we go through a danger of being uncomfortable. Think about that, guys. That these people are told to remember those in prison and identify with them, and they could be in prison because of that. And we're afraid of being inconvenienced. We're afraid of being uncomfortable, and that's why we don't reach out to people. And that's why we don't identify with people. That's why we stay to ourselves and let people just deal with their own stuff. God says to be different. God says to remember those who are being forgotten about and who are struggling. Don't let people fall through the cracks. Don't just stick to your circle, to your group, to your clique. Spread out. Know your family. See what they're going through. Talk to them about their struggles and their difficulties and help them through those. Because different people are at different places in life. And I think sometimes we can justify leaving certain people alone. Well, they've been here for a long time. Well, they're busy. They just had kids. I think that's pretty apparent in this congregation. And so I'm going to stick out of their lives because, you know, they have stuff going on, but I don't think I could really contribute. And God says, contribute in all these people's life because you're a family, so you need to love each other. And then it goes on about contentment in verse 4. Starting in verse 4, it says, let marriage be held in honor among all. And let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous. Keep your life free from money, and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? I think there's this misconception about greed and what greed is. That greed is just this thing that has to do with money and we feel sometimes and is a part of American culture. But really what greed is desiring more of anything than you need of it. What greed is being discontent with the life that you have. And it's not just about money. The Hebrews writer tells us of a different situation where greed is involved. Greed is involved in a lot of American culture in this way. He tells us about our sexual purity and how that is a way that we have contentment in this world. That you don't have a pornography problem, you don't have an affair problem, you don't have a fornication problem because you're lonely, because your marriage is in ruins, because you just want to feel closer to that person. You have those problems because you're selfish. And you're not content with the life that God has given you, and you're seeking more than you need. That's why those problems arise. And we see the same thing happen with money, where I constantly want a new car, I constantly want a bigger house, I constantly need to be buying the next greatest thing because what I have isn't enough for me. And so we live a life of discontentment and greed. And why this is important is because it doesn't just impact you. That being content is a way we love each other, is a way we're a better family member. If you're content, if I'm okay with the life that I have and the life that I'm living and everything God has given me, I can now look outward. I can look to the people that I'm serving and contributing to. That I can be loving. I can be a servant to everyone around me because I'm okay with the life I have, so I can look at the needs of the people around me. That's what contentment does in someone's heart. But when you're discontent, when you have that in your heart instead, you become an extractor. An extractor because you're never satisfied, so you're always taking from people. You're taking their love, you're taking their time, you're taking their resources, and every time you take, it's still not enough because you're not content. Be content with what you have because God has given you everything you need. And this can be hard. Don't get me wrong, especially in the culture that we've all grown up in, that this can be hard to be content with what you have. But God gives us two things, two lines here in Hebrews that I think will help us. He says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. That no matter what's going on in your life, that the stock market could have crashed and you lost all your savings and all your money. You can have whatever situation going on in your family. You can be in a ditch alone somewhere on a cold night, but you have God. And that can be your source of contentment where everything else is taken away from you, that everything around you is shaky and chaotic, but you have God and so you're stable. And so that's enough. And so I can be content because I have the Lord and I know He'll never leave me or forsake me. And so I can be content with the life I have. But Dylan, that's really hard. It's really hard, and you know, I really understand that I need to be having people in my home and be a home to people and be loving to strangers and maybe the people that are different than me, even in this own congregation. And I understand I need to grow in that, and I can get behind that. And you know, I understand that we need to be looking out for each other and seeing where people are being mistreated and going through hardship and being put in their shoes. But this is one I don't know if I can do. And I'm glad you're being honest with yourself and your struggles and what's hard for you. But I also want you to read verse 6 again. The Lord is my helper. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? That God understands that living a life of contentment is hard and difficult. But He is your helper. He's in control of your life and what's going on around you and the situations going on around you. And so He can help you by changing those situations and giving you better things on the outside. But more so, He is your helper in being able to change your attitude in your heart, in who you are. And all those rough edges on your heart, He can smooth out because He can transform you because He is your helper. And He will never leave you and He will never forsake you. So be content with what you have. These are very challenging things, maybe things that you've heard before or good reminders but never implemented in your life. And I think it's important to implement because God is not asking you anything He hasn't done for you already. This is not a love that He hasn't shown you already. That Jesus showed you hospitality, that He invited you into His heavenly home. And He did that through pain and inconvenience of giving up His life for you. You were just a stranger, and He made you feel welcomed. And he also gave you a home in himself to go to and constantly be around and go to in prayer and to feel loved and comforted by. That's who Jesus is. That's who Christ is. That's the way he loved you. And he remembered you while you were in your prison to sin. He came down to heaven and identified with you. He said, I'm going to be where you're at, and I'm going to be tempted like you are tempted. That I'm identifying with those who are in prison, and I'm going to do something about it. That you are being mistreated, and I'm going to help you. And so he freed us from that sin and freed us from that bondage. And he gave us a new life of freedom. And he was content with his bride. Now, there's this imagery throughout the scriptures of us as the bride of Christ. The church is the bride of Christ, and Christ is our husband. And we're a really bad bride. We're a bride that is in need of constant repentance. We're a bride that needs in constant forgiveness. That we mess up over and over again, but yet Christ is content with us. He says, you are enough. In 1 Peter, it says that we are chosen and precious in his sight. That God is content and loves us as we are and loves what we give him and gives back to us even more. That this brotherly love, this familial love that we've talked about throughout this text is something that God has done for us first. So I don't know what your situation is. I don't know which of these you're going to struggle with the most, but I challenge you to push yourself in these ways. To have people into your home and to be a home. I challenge you to remember those that are going through hardship and think of church as a thing that you can give to and be a part of. And also to be in living a life of contentment, where you're constantly not taking from the people around you, but instead giving back. I challenge you in these ways, and I tell you with encouragement that the Lord is your helper. And the Lord is your helper and can help you in all those ways, to be better, to be more, than maybe you are right now. And maybe you're here tonight and you've never been a part of a family like it's described. Maybe you've never been a part of a family like this and you're intrigued by it and you want to know more. Or maybe you know how to become a part of that family and you want to be baptized tonight, entering in a new life as a new child of God. Whatever your need, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.